Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Coach McCartney, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Let's get right into things here and talk a little bit about your background. So what made you want to be a football coach?
I just grew up a student of the game, really. I was surrounded by some great mentors. My uncle Bill McCartney was, I grew up in Michigan, a small town called Riverview, Michigan. And my uncle Bill was, Bo Schembeck was his defensive coordinator when I was, 5 years old. And then he went to Colorado in 83. And then my mom actually married Lloyd Carr, who was the former head football coach at Michigan from 95 to 2007. And he actually is the one that got me my first job at Ypsilanti Willow Run High School in 1995. I was just 21 years old and fell in love and have been coaching every year ever since.
So you got your start at, what was it, Willow Run?
Willow Run High School, yep, in Ypsilanti, Michigan, just outside of Ann Arbor.
What was your first coaching position? What'd you coach?
I was JV, and I did defensive backs and running backs.
So growing up, there had to be some great football conversations around the table at Thanksgiving and Christmas and those types of things, huh?
Yeah, we were pretty fortunate. Yeah, anything we had, any questions that we had, advice, tips, drills, scenarios, those two guys have been there and seen it all. So it was a great resource for me.
Coach, in the last 21 years, of your career, what would you point to as some key points in your development as a coach?
Experience. 21 years. It's a long time. You get better. You get smarter with the years. I think, it goes from, back in my youth, being overly excited and not thinking ahead. As a coordinator, I've been a defensive coordinator for most of those 21 years, maybe 17 of those 21 years. And I think the experience is just invaluable. If you're willing to reflect and sit back after each year, what went right, what went wrong, how my actions affected those around me, whether my assistants or the guys I'm working with, my players. I think one piece of advice that I got from my stepdad that I've used for years is you're going to make mistakes, and that's okay. And if you have to apologize for those mistakes, you apologize and you move on, but you have to learn from those mistakes. And so I think that is just invaluable in itself. And that's what I take each and every year.
Those mistakes can be a powerful thing, but they only come about if you do something that you mentioned there. You have to be reflective. And I think you'd probably learn that too. It's the same in the classroom. You have to be a reflective teacher. You have to be a reflective coach.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, our tests on the field are Friday night. You have to see what did not go right, what you can improve on. You can't be selfish or stubborn or blame kids. I'm a teacher. I teach English. And, if things don't go right in the classroom, I don't just say, well, the kids can't get it. That's their fault. That's not their fault. That's my fault. I'm the teacher. I need to be able to get them, bring them to where I want them to be. And that's the same on the football field. Maybe my drills weren't good enough. My planning, I put a kid in a position that he couldn't be successful. And that's really important, assessing the skill set of your players and putting them in a position to be successful and not asking them to do something that they just can't physically do. And then get bad at the kid. Well, it's not the kid, it's on us as coaches to make sure that we put those kids in positions to be successful.
It's a good process to do that too. If you're reflective as a coach and you can model that for your players will start to be reflective as well. If you're a coach who points the finger, your players are going to point the finger as well. So it kind of works together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And yep. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Coach.
Well, I was thinking about film. We're very fortunate at Seymour High School here in Indiana where I coach, you know, we've got three cameras going every day at practice. And so we like to utilize that film. And, you know, it's a great teaching tool. And the film, we always say the film doesn't lie. And so, you know, if a player thinks, well, I did that, or I didn't do that, or I was right there, well, you show them the film, you say, listen, I'm not coming down on you. I'm not trying to call you out. I'm not pointing a finger. I'm saying, here it is. Let's look at it. You know, we got to assess where we're at, you know, good, bad, ugly, and then fix it, move on, and get to a point where you can be comfortable watching that film and kind of accepting what it shows and then moving on.
Yeah, they have to see it as an educational opportunity. You certainly want them to be on edge about learning and making sure that they're getting what they need in that time and that there is a sense of urgency. But at the same time, you want to remove the emotion of it. I tell guys all the time, this is a surgical process. We have to dissect this. There doesn't have to be emotion associated along with it. We're just looking at the performance, not the person.
Right. Absolutely. We're looking at the process. Yep.
Well, you've obviously had some great people right there at home to have an impact on you. But who's had the greatest impact on your coaching philosophy?
My old head coach, Don Lesner, Dr. Don Lesner, was my football coach in high school. Very successful, was around a long time. And I think it's people like those, you know, most of us probably we can go back to a coach in our past in our middle school, high school, college years. And I think his work ethic, you could tell that he loved his kids. And I think that's what I take, you know, you got to love those kids up, from 1 to 99. They're all, you know, they all have different roles, on your team. You can't just pay attention to your superstars and, you know, and he once told me, I'll never forget playing defensive back in 1991. You know, you get yelled at, you do something wrong, he yells at you and you kind of get pouty and down. And he would say, the only time I would worry is if I wasn't yelling at you, because that means I don't care whether you do good, bad, or indifferent. I'm not really paying attention to you. So, you know, he was a great mentor, a good friend, even after I graduated. And obviously, you know, my uncle and my stepdad, of course, are very impactful with their advice. But I would say Don Lesner, my high school football coach, was probably one of my great mentors.
So looking at how your philosophy has transitioned into some expertise, whether it's and how you develop kids or a scheme, what would you say is your area of expertise as a coach?
You know what? I was thinking about this earlier, and I actually believe my personal area of expertise is in breaking down film. I'm a film junkie. A lot of coaches are film junkies. Can't get enough film. And I think what makes me more successful, which then helps our kids, is I really pride myself on breaking down the film and finding nuances, whether it's a running back who is a yard and a half deeper means it's a run or whatever, pass blocking. You know, a lot of times coordinators look at formations. Yes, this formation means they're going to run this play or that play. Well, it's not only the formation, but it's the personnel. I remember playing as a team in Arizona when I was coaching a high school in Arizona. They would only run to a particular split end side, so that kid who wore number whatever, he was kind of the indicator. And a lot of times, you know, coaches don't catch that. They're just looking at a certain formation. So I think for me, it's breaking down film. It's watching film, understanding what the offense is trying to do, whether it's down or distance, hash, you know, field position. But I would say that's probably my strength.
And in knowing that that's your strength, okay, the reason it is a strength is I'm sure you have a way to translate that to the players. Because if there's a disconnect, I mean, we could have, you know, eight coaches in a room breaking down film, and they can know it better than anybody. But if it somehow does not translate down to the players, it's useless information. So how do you do that?
Well, we do it with scouting reports. It's just like teaching in a classroom. You've got kids, they all learn different ways. And so, you know, a physical piece of paper. So you give them that scouting report. You watch the film. You do it in small groups and position groups outside of your big team meetings. We also give our kids quizzes. I'll physically line them up, you know, before practice and our pre-practice stuff. And I'll say, you know, okay, here's this formation or here's this player. What does that mean? And they have to verbally tell me, you know, watch for this or watch for that, or okay, well, what if it's third and set? Okay, well, they're going to run this. So we're constantly quizzing our kids you know, utilizing that mental part of the game. Because just like anything else, if you just hand them a sheet of paper and say, okay, there's our scouting report, well, you know, great, it's on a sheet of paper. You know, they might look at it once or twice, but that certainly doesn't mean that they're learning, paying attention, that they're understanding what the offense is trying to do to you.
As you've been a defensive coordinator now, you said 17 years. So I think you understand that, you know, in football in general is teams within teams within teams, you know, breaking all the way down to the position. And each of those groups has to be developed so that the greater common good is developed as well. So what do you do to build culture within your defensive unit?
You know, we talk a lot about the unit, and you're exactly right. The unit, yeah, you have individual sections, you know, the front and then linebackers and secondary, of course. But we talk about, we try to get our kids to understand what they do individually, how that affects the scheme of the defense, whether it's a DB rolling into the flat, you know, so if you don't get there, then no one else has that position, or a linebacker, we talk about, you know, impeding the progress of a tight end. Well, it's not just to get a shot on the tight end because the ball's being thrown within 5 yards. No, that helps the safety who's maybe rolling over. It slows him down so the safety gets in position. So we spend a lot of time talking about the inner workings of the defense, you know, gaps, who's got which gap, who's your force player, who's your leverage player, because you're not just on an island. You're not just doing your own thing and that's good enough. It's within the philosophy and the scheme of the defense. And so, you know, we do take time so that everyone understands what they do and how that fits into the entire defensive package.
What kind of defense do you run, Coach?
Well, it depends on the year, to tell you the truth. You know, I would love to run the 3-4 forever. An aggressive 3-4, but you don't always have those kids. And I'm not really this is my defense and we're going to run it no matter who I have. I don't think we can do that, not at our school. When I first got here 2 years ago, we ran a 4-2-5. We ran a 3-4 last year, and we're actually going to run a 4-3 for next year based on our personnel and those kids' skill set. And I think, you know, you talk about trying to not really mask and cover youth and inexperience, but I think for us next year, having some extra linebackers to back up the D-line who's going to be a little bit younger and inexperienced is more important. I don't have the kids to play zero. So in a perfect world, I'd run a 3-4 and I'd play man every snap, and we'd be aggressive. We'll come after you. But, you know, I have to do what's best for our players and to put them in a position to be successful. And so we're going to go to a 4-3 next year.
In looking at how you have that flexibility to change, there has to be something that starts that. And I'm sure for you, it's your defensive philosophy. What are the key things in your defensive philosophy?
Yeah, we're going to concentrate on shutting down the run. We've always been you got to be gap responsible, a gap accountable team, solid in scheme up front in the box. And it doesn't matter to me, you know, 3-3-4-4, 3-4-5-2-4, 3-4-2-5. It doesn't matter. You have to be gap sound. And our philosophy, we want to be aggressive. We don't want to sit and read, and then react. We want to attack and react. But we are definitely stopping the run. We're going to shut it down. We want to force teams to be one-dimensional. And in the passing game, we talk about control. You know, teams are going to, they practice too. They're going to make plays, and that's okay. So as far as our defenses, you know, we pride ourselves in swarm. We call ourselves the swarm. You know, getting as many hats to the ball as possible, whether it's a run or a pass. And so, you know, we pride ourselves on that. But certainly we want to be aggressive. We want to be in your face. We want to shut down the run and control the passing game.
To be able to provide your players that kind of flexibility where this year, and it's a little bit different on defense than it is on O, but still you have to have a system. So you know, you're transitioning from, I'm sorry, you were a 4-2-5 last year, is that right?
2 years ago we were a 3-4 last year.
3-4, and now you're transitioning to a 4-3. So what are the best things that you and your staff do to be able to make those transitions like that, to have your players understand your system?
Well, I think for us, it's a matter of evaluating our kids. We've got really good assistant coaches who In fact, the other two guys on defense are former college players. They're young guys. They're, you know, I'm the old guy on staff. These guys are in their mid-20s. And, you know, it's about evaluating your kids and their skill sets. And, you know, do we have enough bodies to run, you know, a four-man front? Do we have enough linebackers to play in a 4-3? And I think, you know, the difference is, you know, we have those bodies and those kids and you know, the size and strength and their attributes fit a 4-3 more than they do a 3-4. And, you know, we talk about it. It's not just me saying, hey, you know, I'm the coordinator. We're going to run a 4-3 because I like it, or I think it's, you know, I got to ask my D line guy and the line. And this year I'm coaching DBs. I coached linebackers for years. But we have a assistant coach, Brad Whitaker. He's going to do the linebackers, and it's all of us getting together at the end of the season. You know, we talked, you know, we led off this conversation with, evaluation. And that's exactly what we did. We had to evaluate. We lost 19, you know, did not lose, but graduated 19 seniors. And, you know, we got to take a look at, you know, what worked well, what didn't work well, the kids we have coming back, what system fits them best. And, you know, and as far as the kids, you know, kids are flexible, and they already know. They know that we're going to run a 4-3 next year. They're excited about it because it's still the same philosophy. It's still the same coaches. It's still that swarm mentality. So they're like, you know, whatever. We just want to play defense. And we're fortunate because we platoon here. So we have a defense of kids, and that's all they concentrate on is defense. And so that certainly helps when you're in meetings and at practices when those kids are doing defense every day.
Looking at to how that translates on the field, on offense, we always have our go-to or our base plays. And a lot of defensive mm-hmm. coordinators will have their set of calls that, hey, if things are, you know, the offense is doing a good job mixing it up and maybe you haven't got a beat on them yet, they have their go-to calls. What types of things make it into, I know you're transitioning now, but into your go-to yeah. calls that you want to be able to do?
You know, for us, it's kind of like a matching numbers. You know, if a team is tight and heavy and that's where they're running, you can't just sit in your base. So for me, which I assume is probably common with most defensive guys, you can run an over front. You can bring more guys in the box utilizing DBs. And I think I'll be speaking at a clinic in Michigan, and one of the things I want to talk about is using your defensive backs more. You know, don't just sit them back at whether it's cover two or cover three, and they're back at 12 or 15 yards. Well, you know, get them, if a team wants to run wing T double tight, and they've got 11 dudes in the box, don't have two guys out at 15 yards and your corners, you know, 5x3 covering nobodies. You know, get them in there, and I think that's one of the things that we can do defensively is we can move the front. And even bring guys down in the box, and you can still be gap sound, and you can still, whether it's zone or man, you're in good shape there. And so for us, you know, that's the idea. If an offense is gashing us here or there, or you know, it's a passing problem where we don't have guys in the right spots, then we've got to, you know, hopefully we have enough and we've practiced it. And that's one thing, you know, you talked about being a coach and things that you've learned. You know, you can't just blitz or run stunts and think, well, that's going to solve the problem. You know, we pride ourselves on being good in our base, and you know, just to throw something in there, especially if you haven't worked on it, it's not going to work. That you're not going to be successful doing that. And so certainly, you know, coming out of camp, you got to have those things where you can run a different front, you know, go from a 4-3 to maybe a goal line, putting six guys down, you know, packaging. Even on defense, you can do that. You know, we talk about offense. Offenses can package all they want, you know, bring in different personnel types. Well, we can do the same thing on defense. And I think that's important to have that in your toolbox on game day.
So as a coach who has that philosophy, if we're always going to fit this to our personnel, what things do you do from a structural standpoint with your terminology, with your playbook, that doesn't turn your, you know, 2B seniors back into freshmen every year?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, 3-4, 4-3s. It, to me, it's about the fundamentals. It's about technique. It's the skills that you give those kids in your EDDs and your individual sessions. I don't think that those things change. Now, maybe a 3-4 versus a 4-3, your vision key as a linebacker, let's say, you know, you're not looking at guards anymore. Maybe you're reading the tackle. Maybe you want them to look in the backfield as a vision key. So you can change some of those things. But again, it's what you stress. You know, if it's to me, you got to utilize the off season. That's a big key for us is you're right. I mean, if you change from a 3-4 to a 4-3 and you just do it in August and your kids just show up and you're like, okay, here we go. We've got 3 weeks before our first game. And now I want to teach you the ins and outs of the 4-3. Yeah. You're going to be in trouble there. So the summer for us is huge, you know, implementing that and getting that going and talking about your vision keys and your reads and your act. But ultimately, I don't think there's a big drop off or difference in, you know, alignment. Yes. But you're, as a D lineman, your head, your hips, your hands, your feet, they all have to be in the same spots, regardless if you're a 2 technique or a 4 technique or 2, you know, where you are up front and linebackers, how they read and react and they come downhill and they fill or they have to scrape in 45 and those things, those aren't different because you're in a 4-3. I think it's the same techniques, and I think that's what's important is you stress those fundamentals and techniques, and that makes it easier to go from 3-4 to 4-3 because the kids, you know, at the base of it all are still doing the same mechanics.
Coach, let's put a little pressure on you now with your defense. Take a look at a situation and what you're going to do here. So the offense is trying to keep a drive alive while time's running out, and it is 4th and 3 on your own 30-yard line. They're getting close to getting into that field goal range. You know, they just need to put points on the board to go ahead. What are you going to do in this situation against a team that's shown balance? They've been okay on the ground. They've been okay in the air.
Well, if it's 4th and 3, you know what? Hopefully, by this point in the game, you know, we have a better idea of their tendency or their go-to play. And my call is going to be to stop that play or that guy. And that's, you know, that's really two different philosophies. Some coaches believe in you got to stop the player, and other coaches believe you got to stop the play. And I'm the latter. I think you got to stop the play. And so what I would do is I would certainly call our front in any stunt or coverage to stop that play, you know, their go-to play on 4th and 3, you know, and you got to make plays. And so you put your, like we talk about, you put your kids in the best position possible to be successful. And that's what we would do based on the tendencies throughout that day or that game or previous films. And, you know, Let the best team win.
Absolutely. I had one of my mentors always used to say, coaches coach and players play. And I think, you know, you do your best to put them in the position and they got to go out and execute it, which hopefully you prepared them to do. So,
all right. Hopefully you've done a little bit better job on your side.
Right. Coach, we're going to pick up the pace here and go into a segment that we call our up-tempo drill. Some quick question and answers on various topics. So what's a mistake you made as a young coach, and what did you learn from it?
Oh, gosh. Where do I start? As a young guy, I think being too fiery, you know, saying something wrong to a kid, not taking the kid, their feelings and their skill set. You know, that's a pretty new term for me, skill set. Just in the recent few years have I been talking about skill set and really understanding your players, and they're not all the same. They can't all do the same thing. And, you know, you got to know which kids you can get on and which kids you got to, you know, massage the ego a little bit, pull them to the side and talk to them. You can't be a yeller and a screamer the whole time. And I was definitely, you know, one of those yeller, screamer, fly off the handle type guys. And, you know, a lot of times that's not good. Coach and players don't react well to that. And so, you know, I've done a much better job thinking about the kids and, you know, the words coming out of my mouth. So,
well, you've definitely had some high level coaching advice available to you. What's the best piece of advice you've received in your career?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you're right. Couple things. I think, you know, when we talked about, don't be afraid to make a mistake and apologize for it. You know, I think you got to have a core set of values and stick to those. Those can't be compromised, you know. Geez, all these cliches that probably aren't new to anybody. You know, it's about the kids. It's always about the kids. You got to love them up. You know, our culture, why we're successful these years, is because we love our kids. They love each other, and that's, you know, you can't be afraid to say the word and use the word, and it's the absolute truth. And I think that's some great advice. Is it's about the kids. Wins are great. league title, all that stuff is fantastic. And if you work hard and do the right things, you'll get those things. But you know as well as I do, you know, these kids aren't going to Division One and the NFL. And but if you love them up, you know they'll come out better in the classroom and as fathers and brothers and uncles and all those things.
What's a book that you recommend to our listeners?
Oh man, anything by my uncle. He's got like 4 or 5 books out, I think. But you know what? I think drill books are fantastic. You know, we could talk about, you know, different coaches or leaders, and not even in the sport of football, of course. You can talk about John Wooden or other, you know, managers. But I'm all for drill books. I don't think you could have enough drills to cover all the situations and scenarios that you're gonna encounter during a season. So if I'm, you know, giving advice to a young guy that's looking for a book, you know, I would say, one of the things you should always do is go for drill books, not necessarily schemes, because we're not all going to be coordinators or right now, but certainly, equip yourself with drills so that you can get your kids to operate at the best that they can, whether it's a positive or negative situation. You have drills that you can do during practice to emphasize things that you're going to encounter during the game.
What's your favorite piece of coaching technology or a piece that you'd like to incorporate into your workflow?
You know, recently, we've got these iPads, during the game in Indiana, you can have technology on your sideline. So we have iPads, players can look at it. Again, we talked about how we platoon. So when the defense comes off the field, we've got a television actually on the sideline attached to an iPad. We could go over either a sideline view or an end zone view of alignment or what they're trying to do or how we're aligned or misaligned, which happens a lot. You know, high school kids, we're not aligned. Someone's not properly aligned, and that's causing an issue. But, you know, I don't think it's anything fancy. I think a lot of, you know, teams are using huddle sideline, and so are we. It's an Echo. I think it's called Echo that we use, and I think it's pretty invaluable. It's just like, you know, college and NFL now. They get to have those things down there, and we're pretty fortunate to have that.
Yeah, they banned it from college ball. They were going to let us have it, and they took it away, and it's been on the table.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, so I was all excited. I've used it in practice, though. It's been a great tool in practice to give our players immediate feedback as well. What's something you've taken from a coaching clinic and implemented?
You know, I love to take from clinics. I like the little things. A few years ago, I was at a clinic in Boston, and the speaker, who was an old NFL D-line guy, was talking about using a numbering system for hand placement. Well, you know, to me, anything that you can bark out in short bursts, if I see a D-lineman who's got his hands too wide, we yell 33, and that reminds them to get their hands inside on the chest plate of the offensive lineman. Or you yell bite the chin to a kid because he's standing up too tall. The only way you can bite from those chin is by getting your face lower than their face. And so those little things where you can, you know, where you repeat those in practice and the kids know so that you're not stopping a session to, you know, to talk to them for 30 seconds even while everyone's kind of waiting around when you're trying to get through reps. Or during a game, you can just yell out to a kid 33 or hey 15 or leverage. And it's those key terminologies and words, I think, that I've got over the last several clinics that are important to me.
What major concerns do you have right now for the future of our game, and maybe some ideas to help solve those problems?
Well, you know, concussions are all over the place. It doesn't matter what level. And I think, you know, the more negative reports you hear, I think it's trickling down, of course, to our little kids, our little league programs. When those kids can start playing tackle football at 8, you're getting less kids. Certainly, you know, with technology and equipment upgrades, that becomes hopefully less of an issue. But, you know, you're watching these big collisions in college or NFL, and now they've got the targeting going on in college, and so they're really making it aware, and people are aware of this targeting rule, and ejections come with that. And, you know, I think to I think what who it really affects it, it affects those new players with the young parents perhaps who aren't so sure about letting their kids play football because you know what they see on TV is you know but you know you're talking about 8-year-old kids or 10-year-olds right. or 15-year-old kids and they don't run that fast and hit that hard and the collisions aren't like that and so you know you have to calm them down and say listen you're talking about kids who aren't at that level yet and if they're playing the entire time and you know they're coached properly on how to block and tackle and those types of things and we keep getting upgrades with our equipment you know I think that'll help alleviate some of those worries that our younger players and parents are having.
Definitely. What advice would you give to a young coach looking to make it in this profession?
Do as much as you can. You know, local colleges, no matter what the level, a lot of coaches are really, you know, out there friendly, welcoming. They'll let you come to practices, maybe sit on some meetings, you know, grab some film, sit and talk. I would say, you know, get involved as much as possible. Besides the clinics, go to local high schools that are having success. What are they doing? Talk to those coaches. But, you know, take advantage of those opportunities if you're near good high school programs or college programs, you know, contact that staff and see if you can't get up there and watch spring practices, the spring games to, you know, just sitting down and chatting with a position coach of that college that coaches your same position, you know, bouncing off ideas or getting ideas. I think that's huge. Sometimes we think, oh, they're college guys. They don't have time for it. We were all somewhere at some point in the same capacity. We were all young kids, high school ranks. And a lot of those guys don't forget that. And, you know, they'll always take time out for a high school guy. And, you know, that would be my advice.
Coach McCartney, how do you create balance with your health, with your family, with your friends?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, the health question I'm going to skip because I'm not super healthy. I don't eat very well. It's hard. For me personally, health during the season, you know, grabbing a meal whenever you can. That's about choices. I mean, that's about being smart and, you know, fruits and vegetables instead of grabbing just whatever Hot Pockets that are 360 calories per hot pot. I mean, you can't do those types of things and then not getting exercise while you're at it. You know, as an older guy, it's interesting. I don't have the worries of family. My wife's been a coach's wife for 21 years. You know, we've been married 18 years. We've been together 20. So she was there the entire way. Mm-hmm. My boys are in high school now. I coach them. They're with me all the time.
Right.
Whether it's 6 a.m. weight room stuff that's going on right now as our off season kicks off, they're with me. And I think my wife does a great job of getting other coaches' wives together. I think it's important that they spend time together, that we make time on Sundays during the season. Before we have our staff meetings, we actually bring all the families together and we actually have, you know, staff dinners at like 4. And then as coaches, we'll leave and go to the school at 6 and meet, you know, game plan for the upcoming week. But, you know, we do a pretty good job of making sure that, you know, the coaches' wives are in contact and they're relying on each other and no one feels secluded or left out or alone. I think that's important because, you know, happy wife, happy life. So, you know, if he's alone and not happy, you know, it's going to affect coaching. It's going to put a strain and you're going to have to be, you know, ultimately put in a position to decide, can I still do this? You know, and I haven't had to deal with that. It's been fantastic. I have a great family. Obviously, I mean, I think it's been handed down from generation to generation for me, but, you know, so that, yeah, health though, you got me. I'm flunking that course right now. And, you know, and that's me. That's not you know, you can make all excuses and blame situations, things like that. But that's gotta be on me to do better and be smarter with my choices and get out there and exercise a little bit more.
Well, I think as you grow through this game, you find out it's a process for yourself too, to find those routines that are going to work for you.
Yeah, right. Yep.
Till the doctor tells you have to do it. That's
yeah. And I haven't had a doctor tell me that. I mean, so I've been pretty fortunate, but, yeah, you know, I don't know that I would, you know, I don't know how much, you know, knowing myself, you talk about being, you know, reflecting on yourself, I don't know if I would listen to a doctor either. That's just, you know, that's just me, though.
Coach, we got a two-minute drill here. Some very quick question and answers. So,
all right.
Schematically, in your opinion, what's the toughest offense to play against?
One with the tight end and a bruising fullback.
What's your favorite goal line defensive front?
I love an eagle front where I get to blitz the A-gaps.
Turf or grass?
Ooh. We got brand new turf. It's gorgeous, but I just love grass fields.
What's your favorite coverage structure to play out of? One high or two high?
Zero.
Zero.
Oh. Zero. Man, in your face all day long.
Day game or night game?
Night, unless you're playing on a Saturday. Let's make it at noon.
I think I already know this one. If you could only run one defensive front, what would it be?
We run a 3-4.
There you go. What's your favorite quote?
Go blue.
Should the kickoff?
That's not really a quote.
Well, go ahead. You have one? There's lots from those guys. You don't have a bow quote?
Yeah. Those who stay will be champions.
There you go.
Yeah.
Should the kickoff be eliminated?
No.
If you could pick one football coach from the past to learn from, who would it be?
One coach from the past. Let's go. You know, I can't say Bo because I actually knew Bo. How about Woody?
Oh, there you go. Wow. Bo might punch you, but.
No. Uncle Bo, we were tight, man. That's all right.
If you could pick one coach from the present time to learn from, who would it be?
Oof. You know, gosh, that is, man. That's a great question. I'm trying to just go through my mind and just, you know what? I'm going to go with James Franklin because of the streak they're on right now.
Yeah, they had a good one in the championship game for sure.
Yep.
All right, here's one. This one could help your blue. How many teams should be included in the FBS playoff?
How many should be included? I'm going to go with 8. And I'm going to tell you that Michigan should not be in the current top 4.
And
how about that?
All right. That's fair enough. All things equal, do you like to blitz or sit back and play your base?
Oh, I'm going to sit back and play our base because I got to believe that our kids and our base, the way they're coached, are going to be successful. We don't need to blitz. I like to blitz, but I'll sit back and play base all day.
Here's our last question, Coach. What's one thing you could point to for our listeners that would help them out is giving your units, giving your team the winning edge?
Oh, man. Just one thing. You know, I touched on it earlier. I think it's got you got to love those kids up. You got to show them. You got to tell them. And I think, you know, if you have that mutual respect for each other, they're going to listen. They're going to want to perform. Practices are going to go better, which translates to being more prepared and ready to go in the game. I think, you know, we got a lot of X's and O's and techniques and drills and all those things are out there that'll help you. But you got to love those kids up and let them know, you know, you're there for them. And, you know, it goes beyond the game of football.
Coach, we appreciate you being here today. How can our listeners connect with you?
Well, if they want to get a hold of me, they can certainly email me. My email is rmacblue, which is rmacblue at yahoo.com. I also host a online Twitter chat Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. So if you have, you know, my Twitter handle is at rmacblue as well. Makes it pretty convenient. The Twitter, the hashtag is Swarm Football Chat. And so it runs from 9 to 10 Tuesday nights. And, you know, last Tuesday after, you know, the season, it was our first night back. We had we had 49 coaches from around the country participating and giving their advice and hints and tips and tricks. And it's the only defensive-themed Twitter chat out there. There's a lot of Twitter chats Monday through Friday, but we are the only defensive themed one. And they can certainly message me through Twitter or an email and, you know, say, hey, let me know that you are out there and that, well, you know, if I can help them in any way, I certainly will.
Coach, thanks for taking the time to be with us. We really appreciate you.
I appreciate you having me, buddy.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.